DW.
Like 8 million other people around the world, I was conceived via IVF. For me, it was pretty straightforward, with the sperm and egg coming from the mum and dad who raised me. But just over 10% of IVF babies are conceived using eggs from a woman who wasn't their mother, or sperm from a man who wasn't their dad. I've always wondered what that must be like for the children growing up, and now I'm setting off on a road trip to find out. I'm visiting three different donor-conceived IVF children around the UK, starting with Jonathan in Warrington in the northwest of England.
I've got instant coffee, tea. What would you like to drink?
I'm dying for a coffee.
And I've got a cat that's just been sick.
Oh God.
Jonathan is 25. He and his twin sister Catherine were both IVF babies.
This is me and my sister at our 21st birthday. Must have been over 100 people.
Their mum, Joan, gave birth to them, but they were conceived from donor eggs.
So you've known about you being IVF for all your life?
I have, yeah. So my mum's always told us we were special. I've actually met one of the guys who pioneered the process of IVF, a guy called John Webster. Still to this day, it's got to be the most literal version of meeting your maker I've ever come across, ever.
So, well, I always said there were four people involved in creating the twins.
Yeah.
Obviously, the dad, who I'm not with now, but me. Then the professor, who made sure it all happened, and Sylvia, who donated.
As an IVF baby, I've not actually met many other IVF kids. So how did you first find out that you were IVF?
From an early age, me and my sister had a lot of attention. We were made a fuss of. Obviously, we knew about the tragedy of my mum and dad losing Andrew and David in 1988 in the accident.
Long before Jonathan and his sister were born, Joan and her then-husband lost their two boys when a speeding car hit them. Joan was also injured, and eventually, when the couple decided to try for more children, she found she was no longer able to conceive naturally. They turned to IVF using donor eggs, and 18 years later, the woman who had donated them actually got in touch.
Oh, well, I mean, I was the one who... You were in the bath, do you remember?
Yeah.
And I got Sylvia's letter and opened it, and I ran into the bathroom, well, I hobbled in, and Jonathan, I was so excited because she'd given me my life back, literally, so I couldn't wait to meet her, and I was just hoping the reactions would be the same from the twins. Now, he was just the same as me, really excited, and he wanted to, you know, meet her. I wanted to meet her, but Catherine was a little bit... What would you say?
Apprehensive.
Yeah. She said, I've got a mum, you're my mum. I said, yeah, but Sylvia's not claiming that. She just wants to meet you to see that you're OK, you know. And it does have its good points in so much as I'm older than Sylvia. Obviously, she was only allowed to donate eggs up to the age of 35. I was 41 when the boys were killed. So she said, if anything happens to you, I will always be there for the twins. And that's a huge source of comfort to me, being an older mother. I know that she'll always have their interests at heart.
See you in a bit, guys. Thanks so much for talking to us. It's been
a
pleasure.
See you later.
Yeah. We'll let the cats out. Thanks very much. Cheers. So that's the first story I've heard of somebody who has had their eggs donated. And what a reason to have them donated. That's really taken me back, really.
And I know from what my mum's told me about going through IVF that IVF itself is such a journey, and to have that journey first and then follow it up with IVF is amazing, really is.
So I've arrived in Birmingham, so it's the Irvington area, to go meet Gracie. Now, I'm a little bit nervous, funnily enough, because compared to Jonathan's story, Gracie's had a far more difficult experience with IVF, one far different from my own. So I'm very curious, a little bit excited as well, to hear what she's got to say about it.
All right, Gracie,
hello.
How are you doing? Thanks
nice
for getting in touch.
To meet you earlier.
Been looking forward to this for a while.
This one's Percival.
Percival?
All right, Percy.
What's
that for a cat, Percy?
Grace's mum was in her late 40s when she started trying to have a family. She and her partner were unable to produce a fertilised egg themselves. They were offered an embryo from another couple. Gracie knew from an early age how she came into the world, but wasn't always able to explain it.
My closest friend I told, but she didn't really... She thought I came out of an egg, like a
duck egg. But I felt alone because I don't look like anyone.
Gracie doesn't know much for sure, but one thing she's certain of is that her donor father was mixed race. Growing up, she was acutely aware of looking different from her white family, and even went as far as dyeing her hair and lightening her skin with makeup.
I'd go into school looking ill because my face would be so pale. And I struggled with the way that I look, because I look so different to my mum and dad. I had a form tutor that called me an ape and said I had a face for radio. That was to do with everyone else being white.
It wasn't until she was 19 that things changed and Gracie began to embrace herself. She remembers the moment she went into a nightclub which had a sign on the wall saying no homophobia, no sexism and no racism.
So I went there with my hair, because my hair's big and curly, and my normal skin colour. And I was like, I can be me. I don't know what I am yet, but this is working. I can do this.
One overlooked consequence of IVF using donor eggs or sperm, or in Gracie's case, a donor embryo, is a lack of family medical history. Gracie has a degenerative problem in her back. With an unknown medical history, the doctors are not sure what the prognosis for Gracie will be. This could have a massive effect on her life in more ways than one.
It's hard to think about because I'm so far away from wanting children. Yeah. But I want to find out my medical history first, because if what I've got wrong with my back is going to then affect a child, and I don't know how to sort that, I don't know how to help them, like my mum and dad don't know how to help me, am I going to put that on another child?
Being an IVF kid, do you think that makes you more careful about the decision to go with IVF yourself?
Yeah, because my mum and dad, when we spoke about it, they were like, oh, well, we didn't think of that, we just wanted a baby.
Gracie's identity has really been shaped by her being a donor baby, and not knowing who her biological parents are has left a hole. She also knows that she has a twin brother out there somewhere and is desperate to meet him and her donors.
Hopefully they can hear me on the radio if they're around, and if they don't want to know me, that is fine. But I'm here. I'm always here.
That was an amazing story, really, from Gracie that we've just heard. I think her story in particular touches on quite a lot of issues with acceptance of being IVF. So next up on our little road trip is we're going to be heading down to London. We're going to be meeting Louise, who's actually had some success in finding one of her siblings.
I was told, this is a family matter. This is kind of something that we would like to keep within the family.
Unlike myself, Jonathan and Gracie, Louise didn't grow up knowing that she was an IVF kid, let alone that the sperm was donated. Her parents waited until she was 13 to tell her, and even when they had, they made it clear that they didn't want to discuss it again. So for years, she bottled it up until finally it bubbled up to the surface and she sent for a DNA test.
And it was really just finding biological father at that point, but not to replace any father figure or not to step in any role. It's just a pure curiosity thing. I mean, I'm a journalist. I just want to know everything that I can. And when it's about you, I mean, obviously, who doesn't want to know where they come from, you know? So, sent out for that test, and then that just came back with no relatives, basically.
Years passed, and then one day she received an email from someone who said that they were possibly related and might even be half-sisters.
I just almost fell over. And I just ran into my roommate. I was like slamming on his door and he couldn't work out what I was saying. I was so emotional. He thought something really bad had happened because my voice was like 5 octaves too high and I just kept squeaking the word sister.
After verifying that they did indeed have the same biological father, they met in London's biggest train station.
It was the most terrifying thing I've ever done. I thought I was going to burst into tears. I thought I was going to faint. I thought I was going to throw up. And it was the most bizarre, awkward and non-awkward thing ever. I mean, we just walked and talked. We had so much to swap and share, and it was great.
As well as the sisters she's met, statistically, Louise could have around 25 other half-siblings in her area.
Now, I mean, I'm only speaking honestly about this in the last 2 years. No, actually less, just over a year I've been speaking about this, honestly. And firstly, it's because we need to remove the stigma, because we never chose this in the first place. It's not our problem. We, as donor-conceived kids, are always carrying the emotional burden, not only of ourselves, but of everyone else. We're carrying it from the parent who couldn't conceive. We're carrying it when we go into another family and we're trying to meet them and trying to not be a threat, or carrying it when we find the donor and we don't want to threaten his children or his wife, or that there is always such an emotional burden that we're meant to manage, and we have so much that we've already had to manage, and it's just such, it's a lot for a lot of people.
Jonathan and Joan's amazing story shows the potential for donor egg or sperm to really transform lives. But Gracie and Louisa made me consider the consequences as well. Both of them have struggled to understand their identity and deal with a lack of information about who they are. With over 800,000 donor-conceived babies across the world, their stories are probably just the tip of the iceberg. This is Elliot Wright for DW from London, England.
DW.